2 febbraio 2008 il Palazzo delle Papesse ha inaugurato ZA, Giovane Arte dal Sudafrica. Una mostra a cura di Marlene Dumas, Lorenzo Fusi, Kendall Gears, Bernie Searle, Minette Vari e Sue Williamson. Tra gli artisti selezionati, Bridget Baker presenta il video The Pilot e 4 trittici della serie Only You Can. Proprio a partire da quest'ultimo progetto, la Baker ci spiega come lavora, quanto abbia influito sulla prassi artistica la sua esperienza nell'industria del cinema, cosa significhi creatività itinerante e quali siano i punti di forza e di debolezza del sistema dell'arte sudafricana.
I'm Bridget Baker and I'm based in Cape Town in South Africa, and in life at the moment I do have 2 jobs. I'm a clothes stylist in the film industry and I'm also an artist, and so I live a bit of a schizophrenic life of in between making money with clothes styling and then thinking up new projects that I either do in South Africa or in other countries and cities that I sometimes want to go to or I think are relevant for the projects that I want to do. What's interesting in, in the whole art industry in South Africa in terms of funding your work, how do you make work? Where do you get the money to make, to do a project that maybe is, with a budget, you need quite a big budget. We don't have too many, national councils that support the arts. We have one, in fact. And then private funding is really difficult to come by. So if you want to make a project happen on an individual basis, you're going to have to find the funding yourself. And it's interesting, so it makes you quite, you have to be very sure of what you're doing and very convincing. An approach that I've taken is to have a second job, which is on a freelance basis. So I decide when I'm going to take on a job, when I need the money, or if I need to fund a project, then I would have to work more. And so for, I think, 7 years now, I've been a wardrobe designer or clothes stylist in the film industry, which is in Cape Town, which is quite a growing industry. We do a lot of international commercials, ads, movies, and so there's a lot of call for stylists from there. I've done a lot of Italian ads even. So it's interesting working with strangers, you know. Suddenly you get introduced to a director you've never met before and you have to get on. You have to understand what the person's talking about. And then, you know, it's all about translation. And I think that's also quite influenced the projects that I've started to do in my artwork, where if I go to, for example, Delhi, I have to explain a project to a photographer from Delhi and explain the Blue Collar Girl project as I understand it to get that photographer to want to be part of the project. And when you only have 5 days to realize a project, it's very important that they actually feel it, feel it for themselves and want to be a part of it. And so I really think that the whole process in the film industry, which is about you have so little time, you've got to realize this thing really quickly and you work really long hours, has then, you know, crossed over into my own process in my art making and the projects I do. First of all, I would need to explain who the Blue Collar Girl is. She's a woman. I mean, I have a blue coat and a black wig that I travel with. And I need to represent this worker because she's a worker. She, in South Africa, blue-collar workers usually wear blue overalls, the same color as you see in the images. And so first and foremost, she is a worker. She understands that she has to work 9 to 5 and on a job that she probably doesn't really enjoy. But in her mind, she's able to take herself somewhere else because she has a kind of a free spirit. She has an ability to think outside of her now, of her actuality and of her reality. And that takes us to almost the first shot of the triptych, the spaces she can place herself in as the sophisticated, almost 1950s style, not a diva, but like an Elizabeth Taylor persona. And whether or not she's real in that scene, it doesn't really matter because it helps the viewer to kind of go into the past. Not a romantic, nostalgic way, maybe. But then the middle shot like shifts you straight into almost a documentary-style shot, which is straight on, and she is placed either within a city or, as you saw, on a glacier. Her invisibility as a worker is quite clear, I think. It's suddenly she's a part of the scene, whereas in the first shot she is the focus of the scene. The last shot of the triptych is, okay, so she's left the scene. She's left, what has she left behind? It's like all artists who, we really want to make a mark in our lives. We want to make some kind of statement with is a performance or is it sculpture, installation, whatever. But that statement that you leave behind may be seen by very few. The only you can mark that she makes in each of the last shots is in spaces that very few people will actually be able to actually see it. I mean, on a rusted ship, who is going to go on to a rusted ship in the middle of a harbor and engraving into a glass window high up on a building? But there's that ephemerality around an artwork that you can't quite grasp. You can't always grasp that those marks you leave behind, I think, as an individual. And as much as she is invisible as a worker, rest of society possibly regard workers as just doing one kind of a task constantly. And so that worker becomes invisible. So the work that she leaves behind, the only you can statement, is just for a brief moment. That if you are there to see it and it impacts on you, then that's what it's supposed to have done. I used to do quite a lot of text work where I would write Bridget says, and I would say statements, pick statements out from the Bible a lot, especially where Jesus would have said something. And a lot of what he said was just mundane, you know, he was just talking. And I was starting to say things like, I stand at the door and knock, or Bridget says, I stand at the door and knock. And I was thinking, but I mean, this is... Yeah, anybody can say that. So this need to find autonomy with what you say and how you live your life, because what I say is just a lot of the times what anybody else would say. But why, when you say something, you take control of the words that you say. And I finally found this only you can just from years of going through, taking text straight out of sentences, not out of context maybe. But the only you can came from a poster that I've grew up with in the 70s of a little like gazelle. She's crying. And you see this poster in most cities where there's fire problems. And the gazelle is saying, only you can prevent forest fires. And this image of this buck, we call it, or gazelle, it just stuck in my mind so much that I realized it impacted on me that I would be concerned about, you know, lighting matches in a dry area, this kind of thing. And this only you can came back to me as an adult. I chose to use the only you can without prevent forest fires, but in my campaign statement, because in a way this triptych becomes a campaign statement, like an advertising form, especially when you put a copyright sign next to it. It's like, you are saying this, but you're not really saying anything in particular. It's for the viewer to place within their own life, to think about it as they wish, and it has its own implications in each individual life. I think only you can. I think that's such a tricky situation where, you know, artists are making, usually it is often seen this way in history, that you make a work and then 2 years later it is seen, you know, plastered on a billboard, or the same kind of idea, it may be quite shifted for a mass audience. But, I mean, we are, of course, working with such similar media and, of course, this global thinking. And so it's interesting, especially when I started with the Only You Can, then the ANC, which is our majority, our party, ruling party in South Africa, 2004, in their election campaign, they say, you can, with a copyright sign, or in these small posters, all the way up streets. I was so happy that it's also that you're part of something bigger. I mean, you can say, is the advertising industry stealing from what you think? But no, I think we are part of something so much bigger that it's, you realize how your placement and your, the way that you're thinking is on a par. Is, and if it's before the advertising industry gets in, you know, grabs onto an idea, if you've made the work before, that's great. I think it's always going to happen like that. I mean, it's, sure, you can take people to court. I mean, I know that has happened also in South Africa with car ads, that where the artist has taken a car company, a well-known car company, to court because they stole, he feels they stole his idea. But it's because he was approached by them and they asked, would you please do a print campaign? And he refused. So they then interpreted his whole process and brought out an artwork, and that in those kind of situations, it's not on. And that's why I also chose to, with the copyright sign, which as an artist also to say, I am autonomous, what I do is relevant, what I say is relevant. I also went and copyrighted, for 50 years, I've copyrighted the statement, Only You Can. So in terms of textile and fashion and all these things, if I see somebody else using it, I could take them to court. But it's. I just wanted to take that concept further because I think it's relevant. Because the art product, it is a product. It's a product for sale as well. And it takes a different process to get to become the product. Well, I'm mostly, especially with the Blue Collar Girl series, I really want to travel light. I think I haven't had a studio maybe for 7 years. And I used to make objects, very small objects. And always, all of my works anyway, kind of start with an object or two objects. And then placing that object, say, on a person or within a space to give it another context. But really, in that context, I have very little need for a formal space where I can go and, you know, be separate from my domestic space. I can absolutely work from home, and all I really need is a wireless connection, be able to watch, definitely research. I mean, research is a big, big thing. So either I research in Cape Town from material I get from overseas, or like with the movie, I came over to Bern in Switzerland to do research in the Alpine Museum. I take photographs of the objects, went to Berlin and looked at movies from the 1920s in the Film Museum in Berlin, took stills off of these films, and then came back to South Africa, did a storyboard in my own space. And so there's nothing big that I need to really work with. And then when I make my products, so for example, all the props for the movie, I will then source people to make the props. And so they work from their studios. And I go and have a look at how things are going. So the leather outfit she made, we had to fit it on the actress. And I make do with the space that I have. And obviously also then it has changed the kind of work that I make as well. Outsourcing is really big. I mean, I think we all realize we can't do everything ourselves. I mean, if you have the thought of doing something and you have the plan and the drawings, then and you have a very clear idea in your mind of what you want, and you can show in terms of, okay, if it is 1920s styling or 1950s, you can show another who maybe doesn't know clearly what it is, how things should be made and what materials should be used. And so all that research is quite important to do, even though it's often done in a very virtual way. But the role that I have come to have more is a directorial role, and as a producer as well. When it actually happened, I was actually on a job out in a forest doing a film, and my gallery phoned me and said, "You've been invited onto the show." And I remember I'm on my mobile and I'm dressing someone. I'm going, "That's great, that's great. What do they want? Like, what work do they want?" And I was trying to get the information as quickly as possible because any moment now, all the actors had to go onto set. So, and then I wouldn't be able to talk. I just remember not being able to respond as I should have been responding straight away. And that night when I got home, I responded to Lorenzo. And I remember, because I was so rushed, maybe because I was on this job, I possibly didn't respond also in the way I would have liked to. Also, I think because of the timing, when we were invited, it was quite late. It was like November, I remember, when I got the email. And so there was no chance to like make new work. So it was an interesting stage, because we had to discuss what work would be shown quite quickly. We had to come to a decision really quickly. But it just in terms of, being in the notion of coming or having work in Siena was amazing. I mean, because also I've never been to Siena, and what you ask, especially in terms of if an Italian show of young artists was brought to South Africa, that's really interesting. Because it's something that Kendall Gears wrote about in the catalogue, is we don't see exhibitions of international artists, whether young or, you know, prominent, brought to South Africa. Probably also because we don't have the kind of the budgets and the means, you know, financially, to bring large exhibitions. I mean, at the moment we've got Marlene Dumas coming down. It's in Cape Town. And that took a long time to organize. And so it is probably more likely that you would see a show of South African young artists shown in Europe, I think, than the other way around. Especially since 1994, where suddenly there was this honeymoon period of suddenly artists could say whatever they wanted, or could be, they could say personal things, like talk about their family and family history, as opposed to political, like a political situation. There was this period of artists making very personal work, and then moved into this strange political correctness, because then you can't really speak for the other anymore. You can't say, "This is my impression of how a black person lives," because I have no idea how a black person lives. I'm not in a black South African skin. So how can I ever assume to even have a point of view on that? So that has become a problem, where then the work created was politically correct, where my work still, I think, shows that possibly a white artist has made the work. I try to step aside of a white South African artist has made the work. I want to get away from that, where it's an individual, hopefully, who made the work. But this political correctness has become quite a standard in the work, and so therefore the absence of courage, yes, there's like of like meaty, very, you know, taking risks with work. Because what has come into the whole art scene is the galleries. Because before, in apartheid years, there were no galleries that were significant. And now it's become this whole business, you know, your career, your representation is so, so important. And if you want to be on an international level, which is, that's only how you want to be seen. You don't want to only have this profile as a South African artist based in South Africa. So you have to be represented. And when you're represented, what do I make that actually will be sold? So in my mind, in my impression, that absence of courage, yes, there's a lot less of risk taking in terms of like really pushing your own boundaries in your own work. That's why in my work I like to use, for example, in the film where the body of the pilot is pulled up the side of a building, it took 7 men to actually pull her body up. And the woman who plays the protagonist, the pilot, she wasn't even a stunt woman. I mean, she had never done this in her life before. And so there's all this discussion and of how her body, you'd never know that in the film. It just looks like she's unconscious, that she has no fear. But to get all of that done, it took so much, you know. And, you know, right now in South Africa, right now we are dealing with, like, across the board, like, an equalization of our electricity. You know, we have these serious blackouts, serious. At the moment, we can't even, like, discuss white guilt or black, you know, accusations or anything, because we are now all equal. We have so little power at the moment, and right now we have to find a way to, you know, because in our minds we are a first world country, but actually we are seriously third world and going down. And so now, yeah, let's find a way to actually make the country like have power again. I mean, that's where our concern should be right now. Well, I think what is really fantastic about South Africans, which I haven't come across really in a lot of the countries, because I've lived there for so long, is that we are amazing survivalists. We know how to survive. And it sometimes comes across in the work that we make as well. There are choices you have to make on a daily basis just to, you know, just to get to the end of the day. I mean, they are your daily concerns. But if you can, for example, get a project done that you feel so passionate about, you often have to do it under difficult situations. And when you do, you feel really courageous, but your humanity is like really, it's an empowering situation. And a lot of South Africans in different industries, in business, they're doing their own thing. They are creating their own products. They're not waiting for other people or for hope to get a chance outside of South Africa. And I think that's a great thing about our nation as well. We have to be very, very active. And, you know, one can be active on a political level, but which some art practitioners also are, I mean, in terms of teaching and being involved in community work as well. But there are some choices to be active in deciding to live there, you know. And actually, for example, I always will show the work that I make, I will show it first in South Africa, because I think that is most significant. If I make work overseas, in Europe or elsewhere, I want it to be showcased where I come from. And it's also good for the South African audience. I think it also lifts an approach and a way of thinking of we can work on different platforms. We are able to work anywhere, actually. We have felt quite discluded, not included for so long in a way. Or we don't always think we are at the same level somehow. We haven't had the long traditions as Europeans have. And we're such a young country in terms of, so what do we have to offer? But it's, as you say, it's about getting involved. And then that broadens your your views on experience and your experiences, and then you have the same to say, possibly, but on so many different levels you have, and possibly there are not so many things that are where there are differences between us. There are similarities. You realize the more you travel around, oh, I can absolutely be myself everywhere, you know. But one thing I always find with leaving South Africa to do a project is I do experience myself slightly differently elsewhere. It's like I have a holiday from myself, and it's a good thing, because I'm sure where you work, when you leave and say do a job somewhere else, there's a certain kind of a lightness. You leave certain things behind, and I think it's very important also in art making to just focus on what is important for the project. And when you go elsewhere to make the project, sometimes it's easier to focus. Long time ago when I exhibited in America, in New York, it was, I think it was so terrible. I was so young and like impressionable, and my work was not obviously from South Africa at all. It was a group South African exhibition called Liberated Voices, 1997. And the write-ups in the visitor's book were just a lot. Well, of course, I'm going to see it. A lot of, why is Bridget Baker's work on the show and why not William Kentridge? Because her work could have come from anywhere in Europe. And like, we don't want to see Eurocentric work. And it's so strange when you are making this work in your own country and your influences are even your family history, which is from your own country, and your understanding that you come from a small, quite a conservative background, but you are trying to open yourself up in terms of the work that you're making and the way you're presenting it and being courageous. And then you get an approach and a reaction that is, but it's not African. And it's strange how it blows apart, okay, I'm African. So now don't I fit in? Then you start questioning, but yes, I am African. I know I am, but I have my approach. And this thing of now I have to say that I am African is quite a strange thing when you just are. So I don't know if I'm making it clear, but it's just very, very confusing. Very confusing time the first time it happens. And then you start getting used to it in question sessions. But I thought you were going to be black. And then what can you say? I'm not. And then it stops bothering you. And then you realize it's that other person's understanding of culture, the culture that you come from, is very marginal. And it's important that you're there to say, hey, there's a lot of stuff going on in our country, culturally as well. Art world is so similar. If as an artist you are known by a very important curator, you are going to be taken out of the South African context of being a South African artist and easily pulled into a European arena quickly, and then be embraced in that way until you are an individual international artist who has come from South Africa. And so all the definitions start shifting and it becomes less about where you've originally from, but and more about where your influences are now. I have to leave South Africa almost every 2 months. It's very intense there, and it's important for me to be able to leave. So I have made my life, I've structured it in such a way that I can. And yeah, and if it's to do research, if it's to, it's one has to determine what you have to do in life to, also get the best out of your life. So I want to be involved in remain involved in South Africa, but I also know what keeps me sane as well. So.